Even in the age of Zoom, snowstorms can be something to mess with. But while Dan in Arizona didn't have to deal with it, Ken and him set up shop and chat with C from the BAOS podcast based out of Canada. We discuss laws and regulations between the countries, how C got to Canada to start his hip-hop career, and we discuss the similarities and differences between craft beer podcasts and why each one has its own niche and fan base. From buyouts to barrel-aged beers, we run through the gambit of topics and look toward what each show's future may hold. No news this week, but we will be back next week for our final episode of the year with our partners, Porch Drinking.
Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
We are live. This is episode 308 of the Better on Draft podcast. My name is Ken. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. It is a crazy night here in Michigan, obviously, with the snowstorms. Our resident power employee working for DTE, Nicholas, is going to be working on that. And I believe we have a few illnesses. That doesn't stop us from podcasting. Once again, my name is Ken. I am drinking to celebrate our special guest who is going to be with us today. We do not have another brewery, but I have a Le Fin de Monde. Nice triple to start out the night. Dan, it's 4
o'clock. Bonjour, there. Ken. How are you doing? It's 5 o'clock here. It's wintertime.
Okay, 5 o'clock. Bonjour.
Bonjour. How are you?
I'm all right. What are you drinking over there?
And I swear to God, this wasn't planned, but I also have a Le Fin de Monde.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, mine actually has the born on date of 2014 as well, so this is a little aged. But the last time that I had it, it was definitely held up.
Where's the born on date at?
Mine has a code on the bottle, so
I don't know if mine's it's in a can.
Yeah. Or excuse me, 2016. Not 2014. It's two years younger. But with us, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about BAOS, what it stands for, and what you're drinking.
Yes, first and foremost, my name is C. I am from BAOS Podcast. It's beer and other shit, ridiculous name, but you know, one of those things that stuck. I am, funnily enough, just to note, I lived in Montreal for 10 years, and that is where Unibrew are based out of, Chambly, Quebec, which is about 30 minutes from Montreal. I feel very welcome, boys. So I appreciate you. I am now in Ontario, just outside of Toronto. So I representing for a Toronto brewery, Bellwood's Paper Tiger. It is their dry hopped pills. They just brought this back recently. Have you guys heard of Bellwood's at all? I feel like they're pretty well known.
I have not.
I have not either. No.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, just as I said, they're well known. Yeah, they're sort of one of Toronto's, like, about 10 years old, and they sort of were the ones that were the, what do you want to call them? Like the pioneers, I guess, of the haze, milkshakes, all that shit in Ontario, and if not Canada, from 2016, 17-ish. So, you know, they changed a lot out here. You know, huge fan of them forever. So I thought this would be a perfect starter. Plus, this is my first beer of the night. But yeah, man, I have a podcast. We mostly, it sounds like we do the similar things where we mostly interview breweries. I have my dog Barrington on my lap here because he's just a pup and had nowhere else to put him. But yeah, man, we started in 2015 and it was just like a casual thing from my friend and I, who was my co-host at the time. I started when I moved from, I'm from Australia, I guess you can hear the accent. I've been in Canada for 12 years. I'm a citizen now, finally. And when I moved here, the first summer, I drank beer and stuff, whatever. But my friend, one of my friends in Australia invited me to this group, like a Facebook group called 365 Days of Beer, where you had to take a selfie with the can, labeled pint glass or bottle, and then, you know, number it and review it or whatever. So I was like, sure, there isn't 300 beers in the world anyway, so this would be a fail, but let's take a look. This is January 2011, and I end up finishing it in 7 months by August, and then I was like, well, I'm just going to keep doing this. So I'm up to like 7,500 unique beers reviewed. I just kept doing it. So that led to starting a podcast. My girlfriend was like, listen, look for a beer podcast. Why don't you check that out? And this is about 2014, 15, and I just couldn't really find anything. Like, at the time, there was hardly anything, at least locally, to talk about things that I could access, and no, or anything that was there were just like old dudes, like just like, you know, mumbling and shit. It wasn't appealing to me. So she was like, well, why don't you start a podcast? And I'm a musician. I've been doing hip hop music for 20 years with my brothers while we moved to Canada. So I already had the equipment. He's an audio engineer. I'm like, all right, boom. Asked my friend to join me as a host. So we just did it for a laugh. And I called my Tumblr blog Beer and Other Shit because it was everything that I posted on Instagram, including my beer reviews and just other shit. And very lazy name, very stupid, never intended to take it seriously. And the podcast was like a fun side project. It looks like both of you guys are in music as well, so you can understand the frustrations that music consistently offers. So to me, it was just a cool hobby on the side, plus like a creative outlet, do the pod, you know. And then Brie started reaching out, and then we're like, oh, and one of them specifically, funnily enough, also in Montreal, called Glutenberg. They do arguably the best gluten-free beer that I've ever had. They win all the awards at all the different events and stuff. And they didn't want to be on the podcast because of the language, because we were overly cussing and also the cussing in the name. So we're like, all right, fork in the road. Do we say, I don't care, and then just keep doing that? Or do we switch it up? So obviously we chose the latter. Couldn't come up with a better name, so we just abbreviated it to BAOS, that people sometimes think is a word because there's no like periods in between. Yeah, man, we've just been going strong ever since. It's a pretty regular thing to hand off the old pup here. Hang on, wait, he's caught. Headphone. There we go, you got it. Yeah, a pretty regular thing that we do now. We pre-COVID, we were traveling a lot with it. We work with tourism offices and, you know, sent us to work with Colorado, Vermont, Virginia, a few local places as well. So, you know, it's just become like a real side project. We're revenue generating, which is great because we also have a bunch of other businesses that my girlfriend and I run together. So I love it. Get to talk to cool people, a lot smarter than I am. And it's a good time, boys.
You mentioned you moved to Canada for hip hop.
For the hip hop scene, yeah.
I'm not familiar with the Canadian hip hop scene. The only hip hop artist I know from Canada, I believe, is Snow.
He's a reggae artist, but close.
Thank you for informing me on that correction.
Oh, Lord, here we go.
What was the reasoning behind Canada? Because obviously within the United States, we're probably a little bit, a lot of Homerism between West Coast, East Coast, Atlanta, the Carolinas, Detroit. But how do you land in Canada for hip hop?
Great question. Also, have you heard of this guy, Drake?
Yeah,
he might be Canadian.
He was a drummer in a band on a high school TV show, right?
He's got those sick dance moves.
Yeah, he goes hard. Yeah, the Canadian, it's when you put it like that, it is kind of weird. So we got a, we never really felt at home in Australia, I guess, with their music. Australia never really understood hip hop, small scene. And they sort of had this weird way of like, you had to make music in this certain way for it to sort of go anywhere. So a lot of our traction was coming from blogs in the States. And we got this deal back in, oh, it was 09 we got the deal. But in around 07 to 09, there was like the hip hop sort of like the blog era, they call it. And there was this one blogger who was in the top tier of the top five biggest blogs, but he was really supportive of independent and underground artists. So he really supported us, and he started a distribution label. Like he had a sub deal with another label, and we were the first, like our crew was the people that he signed. So to us, it was like, all right, you know, we're getting some looks over here. And I had lived in Toronto in 2004, so I had a bunch of friends here. There's a thing that actually you guys might not be familiar with this because it doesn't exist in the States, but in almost every other country in the world, they have these things called the Working Holiday Program. So there's a reciprocal agreement. Are you familiar?
No, I was just laughing at your setup.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it. I'm almost like bitter because that's why I couldn't come to the States. That's really my answer. Was it's almost impossible to come to the States unless you get married or get a job to sponsor you, or you invest.
We're hardcore for immigration. You're not joking with that.
Oh yeah, not at all. There was no way that I could figure it out. Yeah, and I didn't want to get a job. That was not the intention, or something that locked me in. You could do the extraordinary abilities visa, which is the O visa, but then you have to have these crazy references. You already have to kind of be famous to really get in on that, or at least extremely higher up in the in your field. So there wasn't many options. So in 2004, there's this thing. So as an Australian, you could live and work in Canada for up to 12 months. And you did it one time between 18 and 31 year olds. So we did it in 2004. And I was like, I wanted to be here. And I was like, I'm never going to be able to go back. And then we visited in 08. And then I checked and online, and they happened to change the visa to 2-year visa rolling. So you could just keep applying. So if you're 18, you could just live here nonstop until you're 31. Just keep
reapplying.
Yeah, reapplying, and you get the visa every time. So I was like, sick, that's my window. So we got that, and we just thought, you know what? If we're based in Canada, which is somewhere I know I can be with no problems, I already know people here, I know how it works here, it's a lot easier. So we could easily go to the States for any opportunities. So that was kind of the reasoning behind Canada, and we just stayed.
Now, why Montreal is a curious one. Do you speak French fluently, at least when you arrived?
When I arrived, I did, funnily enough, because so the quick story with that, we moved to Toronto. There was four of us, two of them left. So there was like, we had like a crew, it's called the Movement Fam in Australia. So it was like a whole bunch of other rappers, singers, DJs and stuff like that, like a collective as such. So my brother and I were the main sort of, you know, he was the producer and engineer, and he rapped and I just rapped, but I did all the business side of stuff. So really me and him were the driving force. So four of us moved over, two of them left, and me and him stayed. So we were in Toronto, and then I met my girlfriend maybe 6 months after we moved here. So I've been here 12 and a bit years, and we've been together like coming up on 12 years. So pretty soon into it. And I learned when I was with her, I tried to extend the visa, but I wasn't able to because I was turning 31 too soon before the current visa ended, and you can only renew it within 3 months of it ending. But I was 31, so then it was too late. So I'm like, oh, I'm fucked. Like, what can I do? So we'd been to Montreal on like when we first got together, we did a little weekend, and it's, I don't know if you guys have been, but it's like, it's beautiful, particularly in the summer. It's all like European architecture. Everyone's nice. There's French stuff everywhere. It's romantic. And we had such a great time that she's like, yo, do you want to move to Montreal and learn French and get a study permit for me to stay? And I'm like, sure. So we basically did that. We went to McGill, which is like the Harvard of Canada. And we learned French for 6 months. That was enough to keep me in. I passed the immigration test and everything in French. I got good. Now I'm horrendous, but it was full-time French for 6 months, which was very intense, like 6 hours a day. But yeah, that was Montreal. But when, as far as music, we worked at the Apple store, which Ken and I were just talking offline about that. And I met this lady, because I talk funny, you get into conversations. And this lady was like, oh, I thought I was moving to Montreal. And she's like, oh, my daughter's in Montreal and she's moving to San Francisco, but she runs this event called Hip Hop Karaoke and they're looking for people to replace her. Like, perfect. I don't know anybody in Montreal. So we went down and basically we joined that team. There was like seven of us, but that was great because that got us into the scene, got to meet people, venue owners. So we were able to get a lot of opening slots, DJs, producers, singers, rappers, everyone we needed to know to sort of start doing things. So we got a lot of the big opening acts for a few years in Montreal. Then acts just kind of stopped coming. I think it was just like, it wasn't a recession. It was just like some sort of a dollar plunge. Like the Canadian dollar was worth so little or something that American artists stopped coming because it was too expensive for promoters to make it worthwhile or something like that. But yeah, that was the whole reasoning around it. And we just stayed in Montreal for 10 years because we had super cheap rent. And I feel like if we were in Toronto and everything's crazy expensive, we wouldn't have been able to start our business or continue doing something like BOS because it just, you know, you don't have time to do all these sort of hustles when you got to really worry about just covering rent each month type of thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're mentioning that they're friendly. See, I had a different experience when I was in Montreal, probably because I don't speak a lick of French. I get the same right. kind of reception when I go over to Paris. It's just kind of like, okay, guys, like you don't have to treat me like that because I don't speak French. I mean, the rest of the world speaks English too. You could pick it up, and they're just not wanting to.
Wait, hold on, true. Dan. I heard you say bonjour. So.
I did say bonjour. Yeah, that's about all I know because it's all they keep saying when you're around. Mm-hmm. Same word over and over. So tell us some of the other shit you talk about on the podcast. Obviously, you talk about beer. What else do you get into?
To be honest, not really anything much anymore. It was mostly beer and beer industry. We've had wineries on. We've had cider companies on. I've always wanted to have a coffee roaster on because I'm big on coffee. But that's kind of it, really. Now we don't really stray too much. I feel the thing was, in the beginning, we might have been a little more flexible and been able to kind of talk about whatever. But I feel like as time went on, and I think just like, I don't know, when did you guys start?
2016.
Oh, so you're the same thing. So like,
is that accurate, Ken?
2015.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just selling a short.
There you go. So we're the same age, right? So back then, there wasn't many of us, eh? So when we, like, I think the thing was, we became, and probably similar to you guys, became a little like ingrained and known for beer interviews and brewery stuff. And I know now we have an industry following. So people in the industry listen to learn stuff from their friends, competitors, whatever, just other people in different areas, in different regions and such. So I feel at this point, we wouldn't really be able to stray anymore. I don't think the audience would like it too much. So it's sort of, yeah, the name essentially is redundant. I guess it gives me a window to do it if I want to. I'd be down to do those things I mentioned, more wineries. And I think we only had one. I think we did two cider companies, but I'd be down to do those sort of things and coffee and whatever. But I would like sprinkle them in. I wouldn't like make it a main thing, because I think just people just want to hear the brewery interviews. So, you know, painted ourselves in a corner. For better or worse.
Yeah. So I'm curious, because I know how it changed Better on Draft when the pandemic came around. Yes. How did it affect your show? What did it do as far as how you produced it or what went on? Just give us a story about how you handled that.
Yeah, man. We were, funnily enough, Ken and I were just talking about that offline. The very similar to you guys, to be honest. So previously, we only did it in person. We didn't do maybe the first, we did one in, like, I think I remember episode 6, funnily enough, with my friend in Michigan, Dave Seacott, who was just working for, you guys know him?
Oh, yeah. We've had Dave on a few times. He used to run.
I love Dave.
Detroit. Yep. Yeah, used to run Good Pour. He might still do. But yeah, he was really? With Brew Detroit for a while. And yeah, we've known him. He's been on the show a few times.
Legendary. I should text him then. Love Dave to death. He is such a legend. So he was the first international guest, and we had him on Skype, whatever, virtually, and he just recorded the audio his end. But otherwise, we didn't do it. Didn't enjoy it. Like the experience of, you know, filming in the brewery. So I'd be recording with the guest. My girlfriend would get the B cam, and then she'd go around and get the B roll and all that. It was a whole ordeal to edit. You know, instead of editing a 2-hour interview, we'd cut it down to like the best 20 minutes and splice in the B-roll. But it was just like a process. It was a whole thing. So when the pandemic hit, we were like, oh, fuck, what do we do? So we, just like you guys, it's like, you know, didn't have a choice but to go virtual. So now I don't know if I'd even want to go back, really, unless it's under special certain. Like, say, what we did, though, we broke it down. So you guys, I heard you say it was 300 and something episodes. So we've done a similar amount. And what we did was, I broke them down into different, is it seasons? Yeah, it's seasons, right? Or series. Not seasons.
Seasons would work.
Seasons is the one. So I like, okay, so year one was season one. Year two was season two. So I kind of did that all the way. Then right before the pandemic, we started working on season, I think it was 7. And that was one where it was specifically focused on, it was called Against the Grain. And it was about Quebec breweries who were doing things that the rest of them weren't. So Quebec's known for things like Unibrew, you know, Belgian styles, barrel-aged beers, things like that. And they were very resistant to haze, you know, smoothies, pastry stouts, all that stuff. So I had just a small series with like 6 breweries, very strict topics that we were talking about. We did 4 of them, and the last 2 were scheduled in the first 2 weeks of the lockdown. So they got canceled. And we never finished it. So then I was like, all right, so we made the next series, the adjunct series, which is what we called it. So we had 159 episodes that were just the original ones. And then now we're up to 114 of the adjunct series, where it's just like the virtual one from that, which is kind of allows us to do like an adjunct, throw in anything, do whatever we want. And then, you know, we'll continue. We have series 10, which is Link Up, which is these things here. I could talk about that in a bit, but it's our nonprofit, our craft beer nonprofit. We do beer collabs. So then I made that a series. So where the lazy version, I just do random interviews and throw them in that adjunct series, all breweries, but, you know, still. And then, you know, I'm looking at more creative ideas moving forward. You know, we come up with a theme for a series or a season, and then execute on that. So now it's all virtual, and I kind of prefer it this way for the most part. It's easier. Got a little space now. The sound is always good. all of my stuff is here permanently. I want to get a proper mic. I don't typically need one. I have the old Zoom for when we do pods, but on, you know, on the road, but this doesn't seem to move the needle on these type of ones, as far as I need like the proper, you know, the Shure 7MB, whatever it is. So I'm trying to get that just to up it, but I just didn't need it. It was pretty chill, man. So yeah, that's kind of where it's at now, as far as preferring it. Do you guys prefer the virtual to the in-person? Because I know you guys had the studio.
There is definitely positives and negatives for both. What I love about being in person is that you get a sensitive ability to really play off of people's body language. While we are managing behind the scenes, people don't necessarily get to see all the stuff that we're doing while other people are talking. When you're in person, and especially with me, Dan, and Nick, one of our co-hosts, the first iteration of the show, the three of us were so good at playing off of each other because we've known each other for so long. So talking to each other was just second nature, and being able to know when to get into each, not necessarily conversation or when to jump in, so we're not jumping on top of ourselves or jumping on top of each other. Gotcha. When we're in Zoom, you don't necessarily get that because you're only seeing, you know, pretty much from the chest up. You're not seeing my arms move necessarily. You're not seeing a lot because not everyone's even necessarily watching the Zoom. They're busy looking at our show notes and different information, so they don't get to see it. Now, we kind of followed the same thing that you had, where we didn't necessarily have seasons as much as when like new hosts came on and hosts left, like when Dan left and moved to Arizona, or when we had Ange on for a bit or Matt Bush on. So those were kind of our quote unquote seasons, because you get a different group of people, a different set of hosts. But we actually separated on our show. We have the Better on Draft, the National Series, and then we have the Michigan Series, which we still focus on, kind of like how you were talking with the Against the Grain for Quebec and doing, you know, still hyper local stuff in Quebec or Montreal. We're still doing some in Michigan, but because we are talking to the likes of Sierra Nevada, Yuengling, Boston Beer Company, Firestone Walker, we've garnished such a larger audience that's more national, that when we want to talk to something that's a little bit smaller, like we just did a three-part series with Dark Horse. And while Dark Horse does have a long-standing name within the craft beer industry, they've been with, you know, 25 years, it's been on shelves in most states at one point. Not many people really know about Dark Horse or know about upcoming. We have a brewery called Ellison, which is going to be coming on, and they're going to be talking about their brand new NA beer. And not everyone who lives in California that enjoys all of our national shows wants to listen to that. So we've kind of like segmented it off. It's still on the same stream, but we're still doing shows in person. But the studio is done for. Like we're not going back into a studio. I just enjoy it. I don't know if Dan, you feel the same way. I mean, you were gone for quite a few years before you came back because of COVID.
Yeah, the pandemic actually brought me back. I was sporadic here and there when I managed to travel to Michigan for a couple of years there. Then the pandemic happened. You know, I think the biggest thing about the pandemic too is it really let us get those more national people on. When you were doing the studio, you know, to get someone in the studio was, they had to be pretty local. You couldn't get someone from, say, if you're familiar with Michigan, from like Sheboygan, someplace like that, to come down to the studio. I know Austin Brothers did one, so I guess maybe that's not a good example.
Nick from Sheboygan did as well. So
did he? Yeah. See, I'm screwing up there. So, but yeah, like a Traverse City brewery or a Mackinac City brewery, that it's tough to get into the studio.
Right.
Now that we've gone virtual like this, it really does open it up for people who wouldn't be able to make it in. I think that is the best positive. I do agree with Ken, especially the three of us, and even Rob, because he came in pretty quick after we started too. Really were able to read off of each other, even when it came down to like pouring beer. It was just a really great way to be able to read everyone's body language and see where everyone's coming from. But it, you know, that, so that is the one thing that's missed. But it really, I really love, like, we never would have had Firestone Walker on, for example, one of my favorite breweries out this way, if we didn't go virtual. So it really has, you know, it does have a good benefit as well as the negatives there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Like when we would just, it sounds like we've had very similar paths actually. But yeah, it's really cool to go there. Love seeing a place. Love Actually, you know, you get the tour, you know, you mess around for 30 minutes beforehand, you meet them, you pour the pint, and you're like, you know, hey, do you want something in the meantime? Cool. And you warm, because as hosts, which you guys would know too, you got to warm them up a bit. Some people get nervous when you stick a camera in their face and you're sitting them next year, and you know, then you got to find the space in the brew. So it's like, it's a cool experience, and they, you know, they always treat you like royalty because you're coming in to promote them. So, you know, they take care of you. Sometimes they'll give you a meal if they have a kitchen, and everyone's super cool, might send you away with some beer. Then we do more content to give them more promotion. So that was cool, and I sort of miss it. But then this is more convenient, like you said, like, you know, we wouldn't be able to do this if it wasn't for that. And basically now my only condition is that they send the beer, just because I have a fun thing, and it does sound ridiculous. Obviously, like, if I show you, I have a pretty ridiculous cellar just over here. So I'm not in, I don't need any more beer, but what I learned was, so when the pandemic first started, this is what we did. We had, so say if we had a brewery on, and then I'd be drinking, oh, what are you drinking? I'm drinking Bellwoods. What are you drinking? I'm like, oh, they're drinking their beer. And it kind of felt weird for me to be drinking and essentially promoting another brewery whilst talking to this person about their brewery and they're drinking their beer, but I don't have it. So that always felt weird. And then there's a brewery here called Nickelbrook. These guys right here, actually, we did a collab with them last year. They did these events in 2020, I think. And what they did was they sold like a six-pack where everyone, it was the same six-pack. It was like pretty affordable, 30, 40 bucks, something like that. And then they did a live, like a Zoom live session with the head brewer and the marketing guy. So they'd interview, they'd make it fun and make it jokey. And you just drink through it and everyone's at home anyway. And it's, you know, kind of a, you know, it was this really cool experience. So I was like, that's the secret. That's what we have to do. We have to all drink the same beer, because they had 300-400 people in these Zooms too. So with everyone drinking the same beer and commenting on it, and I was like, this is it. So then we started doing that, and I felt like everything made much more sense after we started doing that. So I've been insistent on that for the last 2.5 years, I'd say. And I think it makes a difference.
Yeah, I'm glad you actually mentioned that. That's something that actually slipped my mind. We've been getting beer shipped to us pretty regularly since the whole pandemic happened. I wish I could show you the closet in this room, because the entire thing is filled with beer over the last year or so that's shown up at our door. It's just so much of it shows up. That was another good benefit of it, because we do get to try beer that we normally wouldn't get to. When we were in the studio, of course, they would, I don't think anyone ever didn't bring beer for us to try. But everyone brought it, you know, whether it be growlers, bottles, cans, whatever they had for us to try. So I know we've made a pretty good effort. In fact, Ken got on me in the earlier days of this to try and be drinking the beer of the person we're interviewing, you know, so we're not doing that. Like, you know, for example, you don't have a brewery, so it's hard. So, you know, I'd be opening a Yingling, and we're having, say, Bells on with John Mountain. Ken's like, no, dude, do you have a Bells you can open there? Something to that effect. And it really does make sense. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to be promoting a different beer while, you know, we're talking about something else.
100%. Yeah, it's just like a weird thing. And like, if you're doing the promo, like what we used to, we don't do this anymore because Instagram only cares about reels, but we would cut like up to a 60-second snippet from the pod. And then what I used to do, we used to post in threes. So I'd post, say, typically with the pods, we'll go for like 2 hours and we'd probably go through 4 beers. You don't drink all of them for the most part, or you'd be pretty slush, but you go through like half of each or something. And I would take photos, or my girlfriend, if she was around now here, I'd do it myself, but I'd take the photos, I'd post, you know, say 2 photos that side, 2 the other side, and then in the middle, I'd post the video. And so it was actually a part of the promo of the podcast. So the idea is to talk about, you know, you talk about the story, but really people care about the product a lot. So you want to show off. You know, they work, that's what they do. They work really hard on that. So you want to talk about, we get nerdy about the product, I imagine you guys too, but you want to show it. You want to use that in the promo to be like, hey, that's what we drank. I've seen people as well, and I imagine this happens with you guys, where they'll post an Instagram story of themselves holding the beer up to maybe their computer or the TV, and they're drinking the same beer that we're drinking whilst watching the brewers have the conversation. And I'm like, this is great, because this is working. Like, that's really cool to me that it's translating in that way. So it just makes more sense. No one's ever pushed back, but I'm always a little concerned that people think that, you know, you're doing it because you want the beer. But when you had a pod like the two of us, like, you know, for so long, you know, it's not, we're not short for beer. We're not struggling for that. So it's never about that. It's just making the experience worthwhile. If the brewery's going to spend the time and the energy, whether it's coming to your studio, whether it's jumping onto Zoom or whatever it is, like, you know, let's do it right. Let's do some promo. Sometimes they'll send like a shirt or a hat or something. I'm like, ah, that's smart, because then I'll wear it. Then it's extra branding. So yeah, it's like, you know, small things.
Go ahead, Ken. Sorry.
I was going to say, yeah, I don't know about the genesis of your show with your friend, but for us, a lot of the conversation is things that we would be conversing at a brewery ourselves. And we would sit down, you know, either with the bartender or, you know, maybe the brewer might stop by, because at this time, the craft beer explosion was like at the precipice of, at least for Michigan, like it was starting to like burst up and blow up. So getting that opportunity to talk to those brewers, I'm like, you know, I feel like this was a great show. So while we're not necessarily too specific into the product, like we'll talk about the product and review the product a little bit, but we're not technical. We're not brewers. We're not people who understand brewing and hops and malt and yeast cultures. But we want to hear the story. And that's kind of the thing with a lot of these guests that we have, is we talk and we hear these stories that you don't necessarily get, because we do our due diligence. We do our research on these people. We learn about their past before they come on. We get called stalker a lot, because we know a little bit about where they were before they even tell us. So we're prepared to ask these questions about, hey, it looks like you were a cellarman over at Budweiser. What was that like? Sure, you're here promoting, say, Sierra Nevada, but you know, there's got to be a story in there that got you from Budweiser to Sierra Nevada. And it also gives an insight to a lot of people that don't understand necessarily what happens at those big name breweries, where you're not necessarily just a cog in the wheel. You're doing something a little bit more specific. So I think for us, we took what we were conversing naturally at the bars with each other, and we're like, let's talk to these people and share their story a little bit more. So for us, we don't necessarily, yes, we do try to drink their product and, you know, review their product, because that's the big thing. But to us, the more important thing is the thing that the people can't get on a shelf. You can't get their story on a shelf.
The story. Yep. Exactly.
I love that. Our tagline is like, we share the stories about the people behind the beer. So
that's a great tagline.
That is exactly what we do. That's what you just said, man. That's it. Like, that's what all of us are here for, because it's cool. It's all about the beer. But like you said, you can't get those stories unless you come here. And for those people, you know, owning, typically we like to, you can speak to anyone, I guess, but I like to speak to either head brewers or owners. Typically both would be optimal, just so that you get, I feel like the head brewer who's in charge, maybe the recipe design or whatever, they, you know, they can speak in detail, like you just said, about the things that we don't know. I don't know shit, man. Like, I'm just a guy. Like, I'm not BJCP or Cicerone or none of that stuff. But these people know everything. I learn a lot from them, so I can speak to them somewhat on their level. So there's that side. And you get the owner. They can talk about the history of the brewery. I like to find out, you know, how did they discover beer and what led to that, you know, wanting to own a brewery and, you know, drop a milli on this spot and getting all this equipment, dealing with all the red tape and all the headache that comes with it, and you know, and the passion that's behind that is very inspiring. So I feel like that is just such an important thing. That isn't it weird as well, though? Like, craft beer, like, why the fuck does craft beer have podcasts? Like, who even cares? But a lot of people care.
A lot of people care.
Yeah,
it's shocking. And it's
like brewery owners or brewers or whatever it might be, celebrities in this very strange niche that we're all obsessed with, and it's, I don't know. I feel like we serve more of a purpose as podcasters than perhaps we did when all of us started in 2015. And it's been cool, you know, ride that wave.
I'll tell you what's funny is when we get recognized by our voices, too. I don't know if it happens to you. It's happened to me and Ken a lot of times where people recognize us from just listening to the show. It's like, wow, okay.
So did you not have video before?
When did we start video? That was
we started video around episode 100 or so. But the video
tried beforehand, but
the video setup was very Imagine, if you will, like a podcast like Joe Rogan, except instead of like cameras that are facing, it's facing like a wall of people on a panel. So if you looked really hard, you might be able to see the person, but you're not necessarily seeing too much of them in some of our older videos, not until we got into that. But we also weren't posting it on like YouTube. Like if you weren't watching it on Facebook video, you were watching it on podcast, like Twitch. iTunes. I mean, we even tried Twitch too, but Twitch necessarily, you're going up against Fortnite people and all these other podcasts.
Someone
and,
in a swimming pool on a
hot
rubber
tub
unicorn.
Hot tub streamers now. Like it's hard to it's not necessarily hard to compete, but we're going towards where a lot of our people are, and a lot of the people that we go to are traveling, and you can't really watch a video while you're traveling. You're listening to a podcast.
Right.
So everyone, you know, you're going to a brewery, therefore you're going to listen to the podcast about that brewery. You're not going to watch the video beforehand and then go to the brewery. You're just going to kind of like, you know, get a feel for that brewery as you're driving up to it. So yeah, I got called at the beginning of the pandemic. I was at a local party store, and I was masked up, and I was talking to Ashley, who was at Holiday Market at the time, and he was getting me a beer from a brewery that I was waiting to pick up, and somebody just eyes are right on me, like, oh my, like, I know this person. And then they finally said, you know, hey, are you Ken from Better on Draft? And I'm like, oh yeah, that's me. But all they could see is just my eyes and my voice.
Interesting. That's cool. That's actually that's really dope that like people are listening that much, and that's, they can recognize you from your voices, particularly because you're Americans and you're in Michigan and they recognize you there. Like, I maybe stand out because of my accent, but
I know all those people in Michigan sound alike, so it makes it hard.
Tell me about it, folks, man. You guys, I can never tell you apart. I have no idea who's talking most of the time. We had video from episode 15. And we've done similar amount of, you guys, somewhere between 3 and 350 episodes. And because of there was the video side, but because of the reviews, so like we've done a bunch of collabs. These are all like collabs we've done, but I had this stupid thing where like, cause you're doing the beer selfies, right? Like, I don't know. I can't smile on command. Like, I didn't know what face to make. So I'd always make stupid faces. And eventually I settled on this sort of like a open mouth face. And that became the thing. So like, you know, we do collabs and there'd be people would put the stupid face on the can or whatever, because that's what unfortunately, became known as that. So I think for me, it was slightly different just because of the people knew the face more, because there was multiple aspects. There was the review side. So maybe people didn't even know about the pod, but they knew about the reviews, which kind of would be strange, I guess, thinking about it like that. But there were so many, most of the stuff is video. We're doing a lot of video work. And because I'm featured prominently in it, I think the face would probably do more, but no one's ever said to me because of the voice over the face. So that's fascinating to me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your travels, because you actually, about 5 years ago, were here in the state of Michigan, hitting up some breweries as well as the Summer Beer Festival. What was your thoughts on the craft beer scene in 2017, as well as the festival that you went to here in Michigan?
Loved it. Great research. You guys were just talking about the research. That's amazing. So that was with Uncle Dave. He hooked that up. So we went to the Michigan Festival of Beer in the 20th anniversary in Ypsilanti. So I had been to Detroit once before for beer. In 11, I think. And we went to like Motor City, Detroit Brewing Company downtown. We went to, I think, Liberty Street, which is now closed. And it was cool, but old beer was like just cool back in the day. Ontario was like, yeah, that's fine, you know, whatever. In 2017, it was dope. Now, that was the interesting thing about Michigan beer at the time, was that was peak haze obsession for me, because I couldn't get it. So the haze was really picking up. It was earlier than that, but it was starting to really pick up in 2017. Like, we got it end of 2016, I think, but hardly anyone here was making it. So I'm going to Michigan, I think it was July 2017, really hoping to find some haze. And many places didn't do it. But then we discovered Old Nation, which was phenomenal. I have a friend now who we did a bit of a trade from Michigan, so I have a can of Bus Tweed in the fridge, which I'm very excited to get into at some point. Haven't had that in years. But yeah, I was very impressed, man. Everyone was super nice. The festival we went to was fire. Dave was working at Arbor Brewing Company at the time, so we hung out there a bunch. I thought their beers were super solid. Great, great food. The one in Ypsilanti, super, was a cool vibe. Yeah, really good food. All the beers were like, I guess, less on the trendy side and more on the sort of, it wasn't like not innovative, but just less on the typical trend at the time. It was haze. I mean, I guess now you'd be looking at pastries and smoothies and all of that stuff. I thought everything was great. I've always loved Michigan beers. We did a bunch of pods there. We did a podcast with Batch, who were doing some killer stuff. We did Holmes, who I know now are killing it. Like at the time, they just opened. That was fantastic. And we did Founders, which was just impressive seeing the scope of, I didn't think I'd ever seen a brewery that big before. Yeah, man, it was just such a good time. We nearly died in the Uber. A guy was falling asleep driving and we had to get him to pull over. Like, that was terrifying. But aside from that, it was a flawless trip, man. Very impressed with the beer and some of the stuff that I'm not sure. So Dave's friend Zach, this dude, he was doing the Brew Detroit podcast with him, and now that Dave's departed, I think that's finished up. But they came up and they brought some Brew Detroit stuff, and then Zach sent me a bunch of beer, and some of the ones he gave me, I think it's called Drafting Table. Their Pilsner was so good, I couldn't believe it. It was exceptional. And another brewery was called Ascension. Love that. He sent me like just a pale ale. It was killer.
Yeah, those breweries are only like 10 minutes from themselves too. So you can.
Yeah. Jealous. Here's the funny thing about this. Me and Ken actually poured for Latitude 42 at the 2017 Summer Beer Fest.
Really?
There's a very good chance we might have poured you a beer at some point.
That is highly like Latitude 42 is the brewery.
Yep.
Okay, I can check Untappd because it'll come up. I have obviously a pretty fuzzy memory of festivals, as we all do.
Yep.
But yeah, man, I'm really impressed with all things Michigan. It was cool because I hadn't been in a while. Obviously, pandemic fucked everything up. But when you wait for citizenship, I've been waiting since August, and they you have to cut up your PR card in front of them. So basically, you can't travel until you get the passport. And without a travel date, you have to wait like 5 months. So I still haven't. I got the passport, so I still can't leave. Hopefully the next week or two is what I am expecting it, but I haven't been able to go anywhere. So it's really, I've been really looking forward to getting back. And now, particularly now, I got a bit of a taste of, you know, of some stuff that has been super impressive. And I, you know, obviously 5 years in the beer world is a millennium type of thing. So, you know, there must be some crazy changes from 2017. To now. So it seems like a really exciting scene out there.
Yeah, the Michigan scene has definitely exploded, both with beers, styles, a lot of places. You know, we had the haze craze. And what's interesting, and I implore you to, along with the, you know, maybe your listeners that come check out the show that do like Old Nation, we actually had Travis Fritz on with the very first batch of M43, in which my favorite quote still from him is, "I don't know how this will go." Still my favorite quote. We've had him on since then to talk about it and the changes. And even most recently with Old Nation, they came to the Fall Beer Fest here in Detroit and only brought lagers. They brought no haze, no IPAs. They brought solely lagers. And everyone, it kind of weirded everyone out. Like, oh my gosh, what's going on here? Why are you bringing this Pilsner and this alt beer and all these other beers that aren't lager or that aren't hazies? Because they got known for it. But I know they don't want to, like, you know, put themselves into a corner to being that hazy brewery. But yeah, the Michigan craft beer scene is crazy. We do know Zach Clark, very, very well. Very, very good guy, fan of the show. Him and I chat all the time about craft beer and social media and marketing and that stuff. Before we kind of like finish up, because we're almost at the hour mark here. I know it flies when you're talking. What are some of the other states that you were able to travel to here in the U.S. to kind of get a taste of their beer scene?
Great question. I definitely had focused on the States since 2016 very heavily. So right, basically from door to door, from Montreal to Burlington, Vermont is about 2 hours. So we went to Vermont like 12 times over the years. I had to count because of immigration. When you apply for citizenship, you have to say every time you left. Vermont is probably my favorite place on the planet, period. Vermont has definitely been an impeccable place. Just like people are lovely. I mean, people are nice everywhere, but the, you know, farm to table vibe there with all the food, over and above the beer, which is just exceptional. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's the OGs like Alchemist and Lawson's or the newer guys like Foam, who we just had on the podcast last night, and Burlington Beer Company and Bent Hill and dudes like that. We have been to New York a bunch, which is super phenomenal. I feel like it's getting better every time we go down there. Virginia, we did a campaign with Visit Virginia, and that was super cool, like really impressive. Over and above like Triple Crossing in the Vale and all the bigger guys, like just a vibe, man. Commonwealth in, I think it's in Virginia Beach or Norfolk. Really, really impressive stuff. We went to California a bunch, of course. We did the trek up to Russian River in Windsor, which was incredible. Then, whether it's LA, San Francisco, and the Bay Area, and I guess into Napa and Sonoma, and down to San Diego as well. Where else have we been?
Great beer scene there.
Colorado was the other one. We did a whole 2-week thing with the tourism office, and they sent us around the whole state. The better beers are obviously in the Front Range, like, you know, Denver, Fort Collins, and Colorado Springs. But definitely, I think Fort Collins was probably some of the best. And we went to GABF. That was 2018. That was fire. Super impressive. And have we been anywhere else? I think that's the main. I went to Philly. I guess that's Pennsylvania stuff. Oh, went to Tide Hands. That was killer. Fuck, that was good. But I think that's probably the main places that we had been, because there was a music festival. We went every year to New York, so we'd often drive and, you know, be able to pick up some stuff to bring back. Vermont, we went all the time. Colorado was just once. So was Virginia. Cali was a few times. But you know, there's so many places. We haven't been back to, Michigan since 2017. I think from Montreal, cause it was so damn far, cause it's like 4 hours from Toronto, and Montreal is already like 5-ish from Toronto. So it was like, it was just a whole thing. Always wanted to check out Maine to see what was popping out there. Still haven't been to Boston. I want to always, you know, go to Treehouse and Trillium and see what's going on there. Those were probably some of the main ones. Florida, I feel like, has some really good stuff. Texas. Oh, I went to Texas as well. Yeah, I went to a few spots in Texas. I've really tried to soak it up, you know, try and get my hands on as much stuff from, you know, you guys are obviously moving the needle everywhere in the world and kind of driving craft beer culture. So I like to try and keep up, because keeping up with you guys is keeping up with the, you know, the bleeding edge, I guess, of the trends. So I think it's fascinating. Everything you guys are doing out there is great. And it's cool to see. Like, I feel like I'll be mind blown next time we go back to Michigan, particularly since, you know, probably would be 6 years close to by the time we get back there. I can only imagine how much that sort of change has, you know, just grown the scene and the improvements and stuff, even just from the little six pack I got to taste. I'm excited to tell, man.
Well, the next time you're coming into Michigan, and of course for all the listeners that decide to come to Michigan, we actually have an app created by Better on Draft called the Michigan Brewery Map app, where you can find every single brewery, including breweries and what they sell. So if you're looking for breweries that sell cider, breweries that sell spirits or wine, if you're looking for breweries that have a kitchen or breweries that are literally open this second, you can utilize the Michigan Brewery Map app for free, free for users, free for brewers. The entire reason is to get everyone back to the breweries. Post COVID. As we finish up every single show, everybody asks you one final question, then we'll give you the opportunity to kind of tell us where we can find you, where we can find your show and all of your content and media. Dan, what is your final question here for C?
All right. I assume you should, but because I assume it's part of the requirement to be a citizen of Canada, but I'm going to ask a qualifying question to see if I can answer this. Do you follow hockey?
No, but I can pretend. No,
you don't have to pretend if you're not a hockey fan. So I thought it was a requirement to be a Canadian, but okay.
They do ask on the citizenship test. I have no idea.
So tell me, what is your least favorite style of beer and why?
Either a Rauch beer, which is probably a pretty common answer. A Rauch beer or anything with too many, I believe it's, is it, I always get confused. Esters or phenols, the banana flavors. I don't like Hefeweizens or like the Belgian. Yeah,
the banana flavor.
The banana. I'm not into that. But yeah, raspberry is just like, you know, campfire cooked bacon in beer. It's just, I imagine it's a real refined palate that gets you there. And yeah, the banana stuff, I can't do Hefeweizens. And I you know, a lot of the Belgian stuff, I love the Belgian sours, Lambics, Goose, all that stuff is fire. But when it's too phenolic, like even Farmhouse, when they're overly phenolic, it's just, it's phenolic. And, excuse me, it's phenolic, right? Is that, am I accurate? I always forget.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's, I'm sure there's probably different ways to say it based on where you are. It's kind of like aluminum and aluminum. There's probably a few different variations.
It's actually spelled different. You don't have the IUM, like on the actual aluminium foil thing. In Canada, you have the French. So the French spell it like we say it, but the Canadian, like the English version, just aluminum. And I'm like, I can never bring myself to say that. I can't do it. I'll say trunk of a car because we don't say that. I will say a bunch of stuff. I'll say soda and shit, but like, I can't do aluminum. But yeah, man, those two is my least favorite. No shade, but fortunately, it's not in my life too much. And there are so, and there are a whole bunch of styles I previously maybe didn't love, like barley wines that I've really kind of fell in love with. More recently. So there's, even if you know, I feel like you, as beer fans, you know what, guys, like people like us who have been in it for so long went through the old school rainbow where it's like, you know, you do the blondes, lagers, ambers, brown ales, porters, stouts, and then you go into the Belgian stuff. You do the whole, you know, the whole thing. The kids these days who get into beer just go straight into haze and like smoothies and they think that's what a sour is and shit. So like I feel like we were almost blessed to be able to really discover everything, and rediscovering those things has been a lot of fun. Like I've enjoyed a lot of brown ales recently, which is kind of weird for me, to be honest, but I'm like, this is fantastic.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the world before hazy IPAs existed was a wonderful thing. It's really kind of overtaken the market, unfortunately. Yeah,
it has, and it'll fade, and it'll still be there, but it'll fade a bit. And I'm starting to see a few signs of that. I imagine we're seeing that everywhere.
There's part of me where, you know, I've been called out for calling out breweries that maybe don't have anything other than IPAs on draft or IPAs and sours, and
there was a whole bunch of shenanigans.
Bunch of shenanigans for sure. My final question is very, very simple. Your show, you've been going on for 300 plus episodes. For the person who has just heard about you for the first time after listening to Better on Draft, what episode should they start off with? What is the hook for them to listen to your show?
Our most downloaded episode is episode 130 of the original series, which is called The Business of Craft Beer Market, The Business of Craft Beer Marketing, with my partner Tiffany and I, where we talked about craft beer marketing. So we have a social media agency, and one thing that breweries typically don't do great is social media. Now, after the last 2 years, 3 years, they're getting a lot better, but previously they sucked horrendously at it. So that's our most downloaded episode, and I think that's a good indicator of, you know, you can learn something, and people seem to like that episode. And I think our most downloaded one recently would be our episode with the brewery called Badlands here in Ontario. That had, I think it's got our most YouTube views and our most downloads as far as the brewery interviews. And that is because they make the, I've been told, the best haze in the world, period, from somebody who owns a brewery here who's from Chicago, but he's lived here for a while. So he's a king haze maker too, and he thinks these guys do it the best. So that's probably why the numbers were so high. And that was a fascinating one because he's a very intelligent dude. So I think those two, I forgot the number of it, with Troy from Badlands in the adjunct series and the original series, episode 130, The Business of Craft Beer Marketing. Check those out for sure.
Perfect. Beer and Other Shit, where can they find you? Podcast, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram. What's the details?
Literally at BAOS Podcast everywhere. allthebove.com, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. LinkedIn, all that shit.
MySpace.
All of it. Pornhub, yeah. Find it all there. Check us out. Say good day. Yeah, man. We are here. We post really regularly. And the podcast we do every Wednesday live at 8 p.m. Eastern. Not live like this is live, but live. They go live.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. That is going to do it for episode 308 of the Better on Draft podcast. No matter what you think of your beer, we think it's Better on Draft. Have a good night.